So today and for the next two evenings, we are going to talk on a very important topic, which is the definition of pure devotional service. After all, we are devotees. We are rendering devotional service, and therefore we should very clearly know what devotional service is and what it isn't. In the Nectar of Devotion, which is Srila Prabhupada's summary translation of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he subtitles the book, The Complete Science of Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is a science. You won't find it taught in any of the science faculties of the university. But it's the most complete science, Srila Prabhupada says. And like in any science, we should know very clearly what the subject is and what the different terms that we use really mean. Everything must be clearly understood and defined. Generally, we find the problem regarding spiritual life is that people don't have clear conceptions of spiritual life. They're mixed up, very confused. Usually, it's all wishy-washy, confused kind of conceptions. Anything is God. Any process of spiritual life is all right. Whatever you can think of, you can meditate on anything. You can concoct any form of meditation or any form of spiritual practice and it's all right. So all over the world, there is tremendous confusion. It was Srila Prabhupada who came up with his books and his teachings and gave so much clarity to everything. Sure, many people disagreed, but at least they couldn't find fault with Prabhupada that he was vague. He wasn't vague. He was very clear, very to the point, very emphatic about what he was convinced about. So therefore, the books of Srila Prabhupada give us a very comprehensive science that clears up all these confusions. Nothing is vague. Nothing is left to the imagination. Nothing is left for speculation. Nothing is left for your opinion and my opinion. The acharyas have already given their opinion. Krishna has already given his opinion. And we just have to accept that and understand that. So this Bhakti Yoga, therefore, is a science. It's a science that we all need to learn. It's a science that is very simple. It's very easy to learn. We don't need to go to university for that. But at the same time, it's the most important subject in our life. So now before we start, I want to have a commitment from all of you. The commitment is that if you haven't already done it, you will at least try to memorize this one verse. Not necessarily today, maybe in the next few days, but you will definitely try your best to memorize it, because this verse is probably the most important verse in our life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defined bhakti as we see in this verse, which is very famous. How many of you have heard this verse before? Anya bhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam. Almost everybody. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, in the 19th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, mentions this verse. And then Rupa Goswami, according to the instructions of Mahaprabhu, when he starts writing his books, then he also incorporates Mahaprabhu's teachings in these books. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is one of the most well-known books of Srila Rupa Goswami, he has also included this in the very, very preliminary stages of the book. In fact, this verse is called the Paribhasha Sutra of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Paribhasha means definition. Sutra means the aphorism or the saying or the statement. So this one verse is the most important verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or the Nectar of Devotion. It is the one verse on which the whole book is based. It's the one verse on which the whole process of bhakti is based. It is a thesis, the foundational thesis of the science of bhakti yoga, in this one little verse, just a few letters. And then this can be fluffed out like cotton and expanded and expanded and expanded into more nectarian descriptions. But fundamentally, this is it. About a year ago, I had spoken on this topic in London here in Hindi language, and then devotees suggested perhaps we should do the same thing in English this time, and that in the temple. So therefore, we have here today many devotees perhaps who attended that class last year. But then, even if you have attended that class, it's always good to hear it again. You refresh your memory, and perhaps you clear up many things that may not have been clear at that time. So we're going to chant this verse together. The Vedic method of recitation, one person recites, the others recite after him, is a very useful method for focusing our mind and actually remembering this verse. We don't want to remember this verse simply to be mundane scholars. We want to learn this verse so that we can meditate upon it and really apply it in our life. It's a very practical verse. It's not just a theoretical thing. It's not something very abstract. So we'll chant this verse, then I'll read the word for word meanings, and then the translation, and we'll expand on that today and tomorrow. And let's see how far we go.
Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama anyabhilashita shunyam Jnana karmadyanavritam anukulyena krishnano shilanam bhaktiruttama anyabhilashita shunyam Jnana karmadyanavritam anukulyena krishnano shilanam bhaktiruttama
Please chant.
Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadyanavritam anukulyena krishnano Shilanam bhakti uttama Anyabhilashita shunyam Jnana karma adhyanavritam Anukulyena krishnano Shilanam bhakti uttama
So please practice this even when you go home. By the time you go home today or to your ashram, we'll give you a sheet of paper in which you will find this verse. So please keep it with you and try to memorize it and meditate on this verse, because this gives us the goal of our life. So word for word meaning and translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Please repeat.
Anya Abhilashita Shunyam.
Without desires.
Without desires.
Other than those.
Other than those.
For the service of Lord Krishna.
For the service of Lord Krishna.
Or.
Or.
Without material desires.
Without material desires.
Such as.
Such as.
Those for meat eating.
Those for meat eating.
Illicit sex,
illicit sex,
gambling,
gambling,
and addiction to intoxicants.
Gyan, gyan,
by the knowledge of the philosophy,
of the monist Mayavadis.
Karma,
karma,
by fruitive activities.
Adi,
adi,
by artificially
practicing detachment. By the mechanical practice, of yoga,
by
studying the Sankhya philosophy,
and so on.
Anavritam,
uncovered,
anukulyena,
favorable,
Krishna anushilanam,
cultivation of service.
In relationship to Krishna.
In relationship
to Krishna. Bhakti Uttama.
Bhakti Uttama.
First class devotional service.
First class service.
Translation. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So Uttama Bhakti, or first class devotional service, in short, pure devotional service. We all want to become pure devotees, isn't it? So this is our formula. This is what it means to be a pure devotee of the Lord. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Spapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are going to analyze this verse according to the way Srila Prabhupada has analyzed it in the Srimad, in the Nectar of Devotion, and also according to the commentaries of Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And then everything will become crystal clear. We are going to dissect this verse. You know the meaning of dissection? We are going to cut it apart, bit by bit. Take apart every word, every part of the word, And then we'll see how everything fits together so nicely. And we'll also see how Rupa Goswami was such a genius that every letter in this verse is crucial, is important. Because the definition is so precisely done, it is very complete. It doesn't leave any scope for ambiguity or for confusion. It doesn't leave any scope for twisting out any other meaning out of it. So Rupa Goswami has done this complete definition in this one verse. So actually, bhakti or devotion, devotional service to the Lord, has two kinds of characteristics just like anything else. One are the primary characteristics, which is called the Swarup Lakshan. And the other are called the secondary characteristics, which is called the Tatastha Lakshan, or the marginal characteristics. So now we have something that we put down here on paper, and I request someone to please distribute these, and you can take these home with you. It's not complete, but we'll talk about it and give you the next sheet when the time comes. Yes, you can just maybe pass it on, take one sheet and pass on the rest, so it is, and you can preserve it in your file at home. So you have the verse there. And you see the primary characteristics and the secondary characteristics. So the primary characteristics in this verse are Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. Right? That's the second and third line. And the secondary characteristics, there are two. Anyabhilashita Shunyam, the first line. And Jnana Karmadi Anavritam, the second line. So first we'll study the primary characteristics of bhakti. What are the main characteristics by which ordinary bhakti can be understood? Many times, especially in India, of course in the West, people aren't so familiar with the term bhakti or devotee. But in India, when you go around to different places, people say, well, I'm also a devotee. I'm also a bhakta. I'm also doing bhakti. But they don't really know what exactly bhakti is, to whom it should be done, how should it be done, what exactly it means to do bhakti. They don't know. So therefore, it's necessary to first understand what is ordinary bhakti. And these primary characteristics of Swarup Lakshan, that means Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam, this defines what is ordinary bhakti. And then the secondary characteristics or the Tatastha Lakshan add on some more extra qualities to ordinary devotional service to make it pure devotional service. There's a difference between ordinary bhakti and pure bhakti. What do we want? Pure bhakti. So therefore, before we understand what is pure bhakti, let's understand what is ordinary bhakti. And then what needs to be added to that ordinary bhakti to make it pure bhakti. So, Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam. Let's talk about the primary characteristics. In Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam, we are going to divide it into three parts. Anukulena, Krishna, and Anushilanam. Again, the word Anushilanam, we are going to dissect this. We are going to talk about this. Anushilanam, again, can be divided into two parts, Anu and Shilanam. Bear with a little bit of dissection and the analysis. But you'll see, it's so beautiful, such a charming analysis that the Acharyas have done. The word Anu can mean many things. For example, we are called Rupanugas. Do you know why we are called Rupanuga? We follow Rupa Goswami, isn't it? Rupa Anuga. Anu and Ga. Ga means to go. Anu means behind. To follow. So one meaning of the word Anu is to follow behind. Or to go after. Another meaning of the word Anu is to do something repeatedly. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna, Mam anusmritya, that you must think of me constantly, repeatedly, always. So another word, another meaning of the word anu is constantly or repeatedly. So that means the first thing about bhakti is that you have to do something. What that something is, we'll come to. You have to do it constantly. You have to do it repeatedly. It's not that you just do it one day a week, one time a week. No, it has to be repeatedly and constantly done. And it has to be done following somebody. Who is that somebody? We'll also come to. It can't be done whimsically. Not as I think it should be done or anybody else thinks it should be done. As Krishna thinks it should be done. And as the great acharyas following in his footsteps think it should be done. So Anu also means actually to be done with devotion, with love. And the word Shilanam comes from the word Shil. The verbal root is Shil, Dhatu. Just like the word Veda, you all heard of the word Veda. It comes from the Sanskrit root Vid, which means to know. So the Veda is the book of knowledge. So like that, the word Shilanam comes from the root Shil. And the word Shil has many meanings. It could mean to serve, to meditate, to worship, to practice. In other words, it indicates activity. Therefore, bhakti indicates activity. Many times, people say, oh, what is this bhakti? You people are just chanting this Hare Krishna, Hare Ram all day. But they don't understand. There's so much activity here. It's not just that we are chanting Hare Krishna. We're doing so many other forms of service as well. And even if you just simply chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, is it an easy thing to do? A person who comes and says dismissively, oh, you people are just chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Ram all day long. That's really some compliment. If someone can sit and chant Hare Krishna all day long, something really creditable. But that also is an activity, isn't it? Even if you're sitting down under a tree, but you need all your energy, mental energy to hear what you're chanting, you need to chant, you need to move your fingers on the beads, you have to sit properly or walk, be attentive. So it's activity. Activities can be bodily activities, mental activities, or verbal activities. Which means one can serve or worship with the body. For example, we come and offer obeisances to Krishna. We use our body to serve. Or we perform the arati. Or we're cleaning the temple. Or we're cooking. Or we're distributing books, carrying them. We're using our body, then the mind has its activities, thinking, feeling, willing. So we think about something, we're thinking about our service, we're planning what to do next, to serve, how to worship, how to meditate, how to serve, how to practice. Similarly, words, verbal. Words are also an activity. When we speak, we are exerting something. We are thinking about what we are speaking. So we can serve, we can practice, worship, meditate, etc. with our body, with our mind, and with our words. And such activities can be positive or negative. Positive activities means that these are activities we do which actually helps us to achieve the goal. When a patient goes to a doctor, the doctor gives do's and don'ts. Says, yes, you take this medicine, you'll be alright. You take this kind of food, you'll become better. So then he does these do's and he improves. But simultaneously, the doctor also gives him don'ts. Along with the positives, he also gets the negatives. Don't eat fried things. Don't take cold stuff. Don't do this. Don't do that. So the patient has to combine the instructions of the doctor, both the do's and the don'ts. You can't selectively have one and do away with the other. One time a patient went to a doctor. He was an alcoholic. And the doctor told him, you see, these are some medicines you have to take, but you have to give up drinking. So the patient started negotiating with the doctor. He said, doctor, look, give some, take some. I listen to 50% what you say, you listen to 50% what I say. So I'll take these medicines, but you let me continue drinking. So it doesn't work like that. You have to do both. You have to follow the do's, you also have to follow the don'ts. So that's shila, shilanam, which means, now you put the two together, put anushilanam together, and what do you have? What does it mean now, anushilanam? What does it mean? Now we define anu, we define shilanam. So what do we have now? Anushilanam, what does it mean? To constantly be engaged in service, worship, meditation, practice, etc. To repeatedly do these activities which may be of the body, of the mind, or of the words. And to do sometimes positive activities, sometimes negative activities. So that is anushilanam. So we have to serve, be constantly engaged in service. So then the question arises, whom shall we serve? Shall we serve our body? Shall we serve our mind? Shall we serve our senses? Shall we serve Durga? Shall we serve our customers? Shall we serve? Whom shall we serve? So then Rupa Goswami has clarified, Krishna. Krishna anushilanam. We have to serve only Krishna. So we rule out all the demigods, we rule out everything else. There's Krishna, very clear. So devotional service means being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna. Following in the footsteps of some great devotees. The word anu also means following after, if you remember. So then we may ask, well, you say worshipping and serving Krishna, but we serve the devotees, we serve Tulasi, we serve the cows, we serve Krishna's holy abode. So then, what about that? So, Jiva Goswami says, no, the word Krishna includes all these things. Also, the nectar of devotion, Prabhupada says, the word Krishna means everything, that Krishna is never alone. Have you ever seen a picture of Krishna alone? So Krishna means Krishna along with all his paraphernalia, his name, his abode, his devotees, and everything connected with Krishna. Because Krishna is the absolute truth, so he includes everything. Krishna also means his expansions, like Lord Narasimha, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Matsya, Lord Kurma, and so on. In other words, when we say we must be constantly engaged in the service of Krishna, we mean not only Krishna of Vrindavan, but we also mean all the expansions of Krishna, all the avatars, the incarnations of Krishna. And we also mean Krishna's pure devotees. We also mean everything connected to Krishna, like Tulasi, the cows, Vrindavan Dham, and so on. So all these things are included in Krishna. And because the spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, so serving the spiritual master and serving the Vaishnavas is also an important element of serving Krishna. There's no contradiction. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that if that wasn't so, then Rupa Goswami's instructions in the nectar of devotion, Guru Pada Ashraya, that we should take shelter of a spiritual master, it would mean that it is not bhakti. But it is bhakti, because the Guru represents Krishna. So serving the Guru is also serving Krishna. The Vaishnavas are devotees of Krishna, so serving the devotees is also serving Krishna. So therefore, Krishnanu Shilanam means to serve Krishna and to please Him. So now we've come to a very, very important point, to constantly be engaged in the service of Krishna by thinking about Him, meditating upon Him, and so on. Now, I'll ask a series of questions, but those who attended the class last year should not answer. Only those who are attending for the first time here should answer. Now, we have already defined Krishnanu Shilanam. Bhakti is Krishnanu Shilanam, which means we have to be constantly engaged in the service of Krishna. So thinking always about Krishna is devotional service, isn't it? Correct? Do you agree? How many of you agree that thinking always about Krishna is devotional service, is bhakti? Alright, very good. So by your definition then, Kamsa and Shishupal are pure devotees. Because they were always thinking of Krishna. But you just said that always thinking of Krishna is being a devotee. So if always thinking of Krishna is the sign of a devotee, then Kamsa is a devotee. If somebody is constantly speaking of Krishna, all the time, that's also devotional service, isn't it? He's a devotee, a great devotee. You agree, isn't it?
No.
Now you become suspicious. Shishupal was also always speaking of Krishna, right from childhood. Ever since he even learned to call out for his mother, which is what a child usually does, the first thing the child learns to call out his mother or some food or something like that. But Shishupal started calling out ill names to Krishna. Such was his envy and hatred for Krishna that even as a child he continued, and he, even in his adult days, all day long, every day, he would just find some reason to criticize Krishna. Of course, Shishupal's mother knew that Krishna would kill him, and she begged Krishna that he should spare her son. And then Krishna said, yes, I will spare your son, but till he reaches 100 abuses, constantly, in a reels off, 100, one after the other, then I'll have to kill him. I can tolerate up to a point. So Shishupal would always control himself. So when he stopped short of the number, he would then know he was safe. He could get away with it. But in the Rajasuya Yajna of Maharaj Yudhishthir, he just lost control of himself because he saw that Krishna was going to be offered the position of respect, the Agra Puja. The Agra Puja in a ceremony like that, in a Vedic ceremony, is offered to someone who is the most respectable personality in the assembly. So there was some discussion, an open discussion in that forum, who should be offered the Agra Puja. Sahadev, the younger Pandava, he said, well, Krishna is the right person. Many others said, well, this Muni, that Rishi, that sage. But Sahadev said, no, Krishna, because he is the Supreme Lord, and he must be offered that position of respect. And Shishupal could not tolerate it. The sign of envy is that we cannot tolerate another person being praised. It burns like anything in the heart. So this is the test of our heart. We want to introspect and how free we are of envy. How does it feel when others are praised? Does it hurt? If we feel joyful, then we are free from envy. But if it hurts, if it pricks, then yes, there is some little problem there. But yes, we chant Hare Krishna and eventually we'll get rid of it. Not to worry. So Shishupal could not tolerate. And then he went on and on and on and on, and Bhima and everyone was about to kill him. And Krishna said, no, that's my prerogative. And then after he had finished 100 abuses, then Krishna let loose the Sudarshan Chakra, chopped off Shishupal's head. But Krishna is so merciful that Shishupal's soul, in front of everybody, in open vision, flew from his body and entered into Krishna's body. In this way he delivered Shishupal, even though Shishupal was so inimical to him. Similarly, Kamsa was constantly thinking of Krishna. So much so that he would dream of Krishna. Even in his sleep he was thinking of Krishna. Something that we would love to do, isn't it? We think of Krishna even in our dreams. We all want to be devotees like that. 24 hours a day thinking of Krishna. But he was thinking with fear. He was thinking, oh, Krishna is going to come. How is he going to come? How will he kill me? He's here. Because Kamsa was sending demons every day to Vrindavan to kill Krishna. And instead of Krishna being killed, it was the demons who were being killed by Krishna. Effortlessly. Here were the most powerful demons on the planet. And the other side, you had a small boy. And that too, a cowherd boy. He didn't know karate and judo and these things. Neither did he have any weapons with him. But he would somehow or the other just kill these demons effortlessly. And Kamsa was beginning to get more and more fearful. Till a time came when he became absolutely mesmerized with fear. All he could do was be fearful. He couldn't sleep at night. He would wake up screaming in fear. All of a sudden in his dream he saw Krishna coming, and he would wake up shouting. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we have two instances of what could be classified as bhakti, because one was always talking about Krishna, the other was always thinking about Krishna. So to say that Krishna no Shilanam is bhakti may not be sufficient. Then you have to say that it must be favorably done. So therefore the word anukulyena is used here. So Rupa Goswami clarifies, it's not sufficient to serve Krishna constantly, to meditate on Krishna constantly, to worship Him constantly. It must be done favorably, in a favorable mood, with a desire to want to please Krishna. So if you say that anukulyena Krishna, alright, it must be done to please Krishna. So if our activity, if Krishnanu Shilanam, the service that we are doing to Krishna, if it pleases Krishna, then it's devotional service, isn't it? Correct? How many of you agree? Now everyone's suspicious. It's very simple. I'm not tricking you. Have faith. We mentioned Anushilanam, that you constantly serve Krishna, and then now we've established that no, you have to serve Krishna so that He is pleased. Isn't it? So now we're saying, constantly serve Krishna and please Him. So that is bhakti, isn't it? You accept that?
Yes.
No doubts?
No.
You're sure?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's take one example. Do you know that when Krishna was fighting Hiranyaksha, Krishna was in the form of Varaha, avatar, and he was fighting Hiranyaksha, he was experiencing great ecstasy. Do you know first of all why Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were born? You know the story of Jay and Vijay. They were doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. And Krishna arranged this whole drama, this whole pastime of the four Kumaras coming to the gate of Vaikuntha. They wanted to enter, and then the gatekeepers Jay and Vijay stopped them and said, no, you can't enter. The four Kumaras were angry and they cursed Jay and Vijay. Now, neither Jay and Vijay nor the four Kumaras would ordinarily have done such, whatever they did. Because it was Krishna within the heart who impelled them to act in a certain way, so they did that. And why did Krishna do so? Because Krishna is a complete personality of Godhead. You see, all the qualities we have in us are all there in Krishna originally. We like to have friendships, we like to talk nicely to people, we like to love others, but we also like to fight sometimes, isn't it? We do fight, isn't it? Perhaps more than we should. But we do fight. So where is the tendency to fight coming from? It's coming from Krishna. Because Krishna has this tendency to fight. But in Krishna, this tendency is wholesome. It's perfect. It's transcendental. It's pleasure-giving. But for us, the tendency to fight creates problems. It creates anxiety. It creates havoc. It creates destruction. But nevertheless, Krishna has this tendency to fight, just like a kshatriya. A kshatriya is one who enjoys fighting, who likes to be sometimes even assaulted, and then he fights back on the battlefield. When you read descriptions of the Mahabharata, you can see how the kshatriya spirit was. And they would applaud an enemy if he fought very bravely. That was the kshatriya spirit. They really, their blood, their hairs would stand on end at the prospect of going for a fight. They would relish it. Just like when we're hungry, we are relishing mentally the prospect of going for a nice plate of prasadam. We are relishing in our mind, oh, how nice it will be when I go and I take this prasadam. So a genuine kshatriya is relishing the prospect of going out for a good fight. So when Krishna is in that mood, he wants to enjoy what's called the Yuddha Vir Ras. You know that there are five primary rasas or mellows in which Krishna deals with his devotees, isn't it? What are those five rasas? Dasya, Prashanta, Shanta, Dasya, Sakhya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. These are the primary rasas. But there are also seven secondary rasas which serve to nourish these main five rasas. Just like you have salt and spices and all to make your prasada more delicious, more tasty. So these seven secondary rasas, make these other primary rasas more relishable. And one of these seven secondary rasas is called the Vir Ras, the mellow of chivalry. Sometimes Krishna also likes to enjoy this. Krishna is called Rasaraj. He is Rasika Shekhar. He is the one who likes to enjoy transcendental mellows. The five main ones and also the seven secondary ones. So sometimes Krishna feels like fighting when he is in Goloka Vrindavan. But in Goloka Vrindavan, everyone is his devotee. So whom will he fight with? So he needs someone to fight with. So who? He has to come to the material world to fight. But then in the material world, who is strong enough and who is big enough to fight with Krishna? So Krishna has to send down his own associates from the spiritual world. Send them to become asuras here. And then Krishna comes down here and has a jolly good fight. And then Krishna enjoys it. He experiences some ecstasy, some happiness. When Bhishma, on the battlefield, he was on the opposite army, in the army of the Kauravas, and Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas. He was driving Arjuna's chariot. And when Bhishma was shooting arrows at Arjuna, sometimes the arrows would hit Krishna and he would feel them like offerings of flowers. Because Bhishma was a great devotee as well. So Krishna was experiencing great happiness. So similarly, when he was fighting with Hiranyaksha, he was experiencing some ecstasy, he was experiencing happiness, he was pleased by the good fight that Hiranyaksha gave him. Similarly, When the Lord came as Narasimhadev and he had a good fight with Hiranyakashipu, similarly Lord Ramachandra had a good fight with Ravan, and he was pleased, he was happy after fighting. So now you have already agreed and stated very clearly that by engaging in the service of Krishna and pleasing him is devotional service. You said that, isn't it? So you don't deny it now, right? So by your definition, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana are all great devotees because they gave great ecstasy to Krishna. Do we accept that? No. Why not? Yes or no? In a negative way, but they gave pleasure to Krishna, so they are devotees, so should we follow in the footsteps of Hiranyakashipu? We would like to follow in the footsteps of great devotees, isn't it? Mahajano yena gatha sapantha. Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Instruction, says, Sato vritte, we have to follow in the footsteps of the great Vaishnavas. So, if Hiranyakashipu and Ravan and company, if they are great devotees because they pleased Krishna, then we should follow in their footsteps. We should also become demoniac. So where is the flaw? Where is the catch here? Yes, Mataji. Yes, we should not follow in their footsteps because even though they were serving Krishna, it was not being favorably done. Now, what exactly does it mean to be favorably serving Krishna? We mentioned that favorably serving Krishna means to please him, isn't it? But Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha and Ravan, they pleased the Lord because of their fighting ability. The Lord was pleased. It was
motivated
by?
They are like Mahajanas. Without selfishness.
Why are they not Mahajanas? They are pleasing Krishna.
Without selfish desire. Because
without selfish desire, alright.
He wasn't free from. He wasn't done with devotion, but he was selfish.
You see, there are two things here. Yes, Prabhu.
You were serving Krishna, but on a negative way, like at the same time, they were not serving the.
Yes, he served in a negative way, but still Krishna was pleased, wasn't he?
At the same time, he was not serving his devotee. He was giving hard time to
him. He was harassing Krishna's devotees. Okay, yes. That's fine. But the point I want to make is there are two important things here. Please listen attentively. It's one thing to please Krishna. It's another thing to want to please Krishna. These two things are greatly different. Can someone repeat what I said? Yes. It's one thing to please Krishna, and it's another thing to want to please Krishna. So, Ravan, Kumbhakarna and all the others, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, they may have pleased Krishna, but they did not want to please Krishna. And therefore their activity is not considered bhakti. And let's take the reverse. If you make Krishna upset, if you displease Krishna, then obviously it's not bhakti, isn't it? You agree? Don't change your statements later, okay? If you displease Krishna, then it's not bhakti.
That's not true.
No? Well, were you supposed to please Krishna? If you displease Krishna, how can it be bhakti?
Because you may want to please him, but displease him.
You may want to please him and displease him, but suppose it's done out of ignorance. Then it may not be so pleasing. Let's take an example. Mother Yashoda was feeding Krishna with milk. And Krishna was happily drinking milk. And then Mother Yashoda realized that, oh, I've kept the milk on the stove and it's boiling over, and I must rush there to take the milk off the stove. Otherwise it'll boil over, it'll flow over, it'll spill over, and then there won't be any milk left for Krishna, because I have to make so many nice sweets and so on out of this milk for Krishna. So she abruptly put Krishna down on the floor and she rushed to the stove. Krishna was not pleased. On the contrary, he was angry. How dare my mother put me down like this abruptly? I am still not satisfied. I am drinking milk. I am still hungry. And she all of a sudden didn't even care for my feelings. She didn't even care that I am still hungry. She didn't even bother to say, excuse me, I'll come back in a moment. She just kept me down and she rushed to the stove. What is this? I'm still hungry. So then Krishna became upset. He was angry. He looked around here and there. Said that he wanted to do some mischief now in his anger. He said, I'll teach my mother a lesson. She should not do this to me again. He found some thing. He found some stick. He broke a few pots and started relishing the butter and the yogurt. And he made a complete mess in the room. He broke all the pots around here, and then he realized, oh, now maybe my mother will get angry, so I better go away from here. And then Krishna left. He ran away from there. And then Mother Yashoda came, and then, you know, the whole story of the Damodar Leela. So now, Mother Yashoda made Krishna angry. She displeased Krishna. Therefore, she is not a devotee. Isn't it? So how do you explain that she is a devotee if she displeased Krishna? Yes? Yes? Yes, because ultimately she wanted to please Krishna. She wanted to serve Krishna very, very intensely. Nandaha kim akarod brahman shreya eva mahodayam yashoda cha mahabhaga papo yasyastanam harihi. Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadev Goswami, my dear Brahman, what are the austerities and pious activities, and what else have these two, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, done that they could get this great fortune which is unimaginable for the others? And as far as Nanda Maharaj is concerned, Krishna was playing in his courtyard. He became his son. He was crawling and playing like an ordinary child. And for what about Mother Yashoda? Just see her good fortune. The Supreme Absolute Truth, the Lord of Lords, the Supreme Personality of Godhead came as a small child in her lap and was drinking the milk from her breast. What kind of austerities must she have done to merit such a good fortune? So such is the exalted status of Mother Yashoda. Her devotion is absolutely pure, exalted. Everything she does, small or big, is only meant for Krishna's pleasure. It's only meant to serve Krishna better. So because she is motivated overwhelmingly, intensely, purely by the desire to serve Krishna in the best possible way, so even though she made Krishna angry, actually Krishna was pleased. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Krishna is far more pleased by the taunts of his cowherd boyfriends. Hey Krishna, you think you're very strong? You're weak. Compared to me, you're nothing. You see my strength. And they taunt him. So Krishna is pleased by those taunts. Krishna is pleased by the rebukes of the gopis who reprimand him and criticize him. Krishna is pleased by the chastisement that he received from Mother Yashoda much more than he is pleased when the demigods offer the Purusha Sukta prayers. Because these three categories, the gopas, the gopis and Mother Yashoda, their words come out of intense love for Krishna. Therefore Krishna is very pleased to receive it, although he sometimes becomes angry, but that anger is also transcendental pleasure for Krishna. But moreover, from the devotee's point of view, from Mother Yashoda's point of view, we understand that because the intention was overwhelmingly to please Krishna and to serve him, therefore it is bhakti even though Krishna was angry. Mother Yashoda used to take the best of the cows from her herd of 9 lakh cows. Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. And then she would take just the choicest of them and then feed them the best grass. And in this way she would fine-tune it and bring it down, shortlist to the best cows. She would take their milk, and it was that milk that she was boiling on the stove, because she wanted to make some nice foodstuffs for Krishna. So this was her sentiment. So we don't go simply by whether Krishna was pleased or not. So what is important? What is important is, do we have an attitude or an intention or a desire to please Krishna? That is what constitutes bhakti. Not simply the fact that incidentally Krishna is pleased. No. So therefore the purport of the word anukulyena means that we should please Krishna, we should be intending to please Krishna very purely, very sincerely. Therefore the word anukulyena krishnanushilanam is very important. So it means now therefore that bhakti or ordinary bhakti is engaging our mind, our body, our words in a positive way, in a negative way, negative in the sense of avoiding those things that are unfavorable, and acting with a very sincere and intense desire to please Krishna. That is ordinary bhakti. So what's pure bhakti then? Something much more, that we'll see tomorrow. So this is ordinary devotional service. And here we have the second sheet. Can somebody please do the service of Krishnanushilanam? Somebody on this side please, one each. That's the second sheet. So can someone summarize this point about anukulyena? Who would like to summarize? Just to see that you've got it right. Anyone, please raise your hand. So is this anukulyena krishnanushilanam clear? Anyone want to summarize it? Yes. Yes. So the word anukulyena or favorably means that you should have that favorable disposition, right? You should be wanting to please Krishna. That makes it favorable. So the sheet you have there, it suffices for understanding ordinary devotional service. And we'll continue tomorrow evening at 7:30 with pure devotional service. Hare Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Gaur Premanande.